Hi, this is Steve Nerlich.
Why cheap astronomy?
Yeah, why? And this is Dear Cheap Astronomy, episode 144, Interstellar Travel is a bit. Space-time is really big and long, and outside of science fiction, there doesn't seem to be any way around it. So are aliens ever going to come and meet us, or are we ever going to go and meet them? Well, Dear Cheap Astronomy, what do you think first contact will be like? Having never had contact with aliens, humans are wont to wildly speculate on how, when, and where it might happen. Here at Cheap Astronomy, we do tend to cover this area quite often, and here are our conclusions to date. Firstly, given relativity, it looks unlikely that any future technological advancement will ever enable faster-than-light travel or faster-than-light communication. So, with likely travel times between populated stellar systems in the order of hundreds or thousands of years, it's hard to imagine humans choosing to lock themselves up in a cramped spaceship for a lifetime, as well as dooming their children and grandchildren to the same fate for the sake of reaching a destination centuries or millennia later, which is unlikely to closely match Earth with respect to atmosphere, gravity, or stellar radiation. Hopefully it will have water, but finding an ecosystem with edible organisms that can deliver all our nutritional requirements seems highly unlikely. So we can't just go with enough food to sustain us on the journey, we'll also need to take the makings of a sustainable ecosystem. You can take lots of vitamin pills with you, but they will have a shelf life. So a range of crop plants and perhaps some insect-based protein sources seem essential. Taking macrofauna like cows and chickens would be both energy and volume inefficient, and it would carry disease risks, although perhaps some kind of cultured lab meat could be an option. But even assuming you have enough food and water, surviving the journey also depends on lots of key engineering systems not breaking down over hundreds or thousands of years, since there's no hope of calling in a repair person or buying spare parts. And of course, there's also radiation and collision risks to deal with. Another way to meet aliens might be by them coming to us, but they will face all those same issues, even if being alien makes it a different experience for them. They might be colony creatures, where the comfort or survival of individuals isn't an issue, or their lifespans might be very different, where a very short or a very long lifespan might mean that sitting in a tin can for hundreds or thousands of years isn't that big a deal. But it would still take a lot of energy and resources to undertake the journey, and after they do arrive, it's not like they can just sit down for a chat over coffee and croissants. So we might be better just staying home and trying to communicate via electromagnetic radiation, such as radio, but there's still that matter of the speed of light, meaning that any discussion between stellar systems 100 light-years apart will have 100-year pauses in between. Again, this might not bother aliens, even if it drives us crazy, and after just a few centuries of a communication exchange, using carefully curated lists of questions, we might both gain quite a lot of knowledge from each other, at least for our respective grandchildren. And then a third alternative is that we just send our respective robots, presumably with advanced AI capabilities, so they don't have to wait for instructions from back home when different decisions are required. It's not particularly likely that the robots will either want or need to actually meet and shake appendages, but by gaining some proximity to each other, they could exchange information in close to real time, asking the set of curated questions they brought along, as well as comparing notes about their respective progenitors. That mutual exchange of information, in close to real time, would cut out a lot of to-ing and fro-ing between the distant civilizations. And after their close exchange, the robots could phone home their respective findings, which might include both photos of their new surroundings and their new associates. It's unlikely that our robots would be humanoid, or their robots would be whateveroid. More likely both would just be computerized spacecraft, but a few photos of each other's technologies would still be instructive. Of course, all of this assumes a mutual degree of benevolence and a willingness to share, which is a somewhat fleeting part of our nature and may well not be any part of theirs. So, while sharing information might be primarily motivated by a desire for self-gain, that does seem to be the most likely factor that all living beings will have in common.
This is the middle bit.
So first contact will almost certainly be by email or robot. That might not work as a great story for a movie, but there it is. Moving on though, is it really out of the question that we could go and visit them? Well, once we think about that, we can start understanding why they haven't come to visit us. Dear Cheap Astronomy, what are closed ecological life support systems? A recent Cheap Astronomy episode covered the need for sustainable life support systems in very long duration space missions where resupplies aren't really an option. The basic principle of a closed ecological life support system is to recycle everything, which is straightforward in principle, insofar as water and carbon dioxide can be turned into carbohydrates and oxygen by photosynthesis, and then carbohydrates and oxygen can feed a metabolizing organism, which then produces water and carbon dioxide as waste products. Things get more complicated when you add more chemistry needed to build proteins and fats, as well as carbohydrates, but then it can be conceptualized as one organism composed of carbohydrates, proteins, and fats getting eaten by another organism to build up its own body of carbohydrates, proteins, and fats, and ultimately its waste products return to the soil, feeding worms, and ultimately fertilizing the plants that underlie the whole ecosystem. So all you really need is an input of energy and the raw materials that get recycled. Currently, we do have water recycling on the International Space Station, and we are growing some plants up there too. Not enough plants to absorb all the crew's exhaled CO2, but that's just an issue of scaling. To make it work, both the water recycling and the plants need energy, which is generated from the ISS's solar panels, which will power the grow lights and the water recycling units. But to take all this to the extreme of a generational starship that's on a 1,000-year journey between stellar systems, you not only need the energy and the raw materials, you also need meticulous planning. Well, of course, the very first thing you need is a 1,000-year duration energy source on board, since there will be minimal starlight available across the void between star systems. That is a pretty big thing to just assume, but for the sake of this episode, let's just do a bit of hand-waving and assume we do have unlimited energy for the grow lights and the recycling machines. From there, you could build a closed ecosystem based on crop plants in greenhouses, although you would also need to go down the genetic modification route, ensuring you have plants that deliver high yields and with added genes, so those plants can also make all the vitamins we need. To get more protein and more dietary diversity, you could add a fish farm where you convert different organic waste products into fish food. Or if you have volume restrictions, you could have an insect farm instead, where, for example, freeze-dried crickets can apparently make a very good protein-rich flour. And if your volume is really limited, you could just grow algae and fungi, where the algae would use grow lights and fertilizer, and the fungi would grow on other organic waste. And from all that, you could get a food product that's something like Soylent Green. And yes, it would be people. Wherever we've said fertilizer and organic waste in the previous narrative, we are including people, that is, ripe old aged and assisted dying people. So, that all sounds feasible, but running a genuine closed ecological life support system that has to operate over a millennia with no chance of resupply, you really have to work hard to keep all the nutrients cycling through the system, and you have to maintain a very fine balance of inputs and outputs. So, not only do dead people need to be recycled, but no one can have a child until someone else dies, or you risk running out of food. Alternatively, if you have a number of deaths all at once, you may have to lose some plants because there's not enough CO2 being exhaled to keep the plants going. And of course, when you lose a few plants, there's less oxygen being produced. So it works out that you can't necessarily have more kids later on to compensate for a run of sudden deaths, because the whole ecosystem would have shrunk in the interim period. You might manage to get around all that by having stored oxygen and CO2, and perhaps stored seeds and frozen embryos. But it does seem likely there will be an entropy-related inevitability in seeing the capacity of your closed system declining over time, because the perfect balance you need can't be maintained indefinitely. So it's likely that in the absence of new inputs, a closed ecosystem will inevitably shrink, which is a frightening prospect for a population of people locked in a spaceship on a 1,000-year-long journey. The solution? Think twice about doing it, and maybe just send the robots.
This is the end bit.
So, there you go. Interstellar travel really is a bit, and it doesn't look very likely we'll ever do it unless we find some kind of unlimited energy supply we can put on board a ship that allows us to accelerate up to light speed and then take advantage of time dilation. If we can do that, we really can cross thousands of light years in a lifetime, but in the meantime, thousands of years will pass by back on Earth. And we're not saying that finding an unlimited energy supply is likely, we're just saying it's the only way you could do it. But that's it for another episode of Dear Cheap Astronomy. If you've got a space science question, or you just want to dilate time with unlimited energy, why not write to cheapastro@gmail.com and we'll contract all the links for you. Thanks for listening. Steve Nerlich, Cheap Astronomy.